Support for KPLU comes from the Museum of Flight, all year celebrating 100 years of Boeing innovations and the Seattle culture, with live performances and new exhibits monthly. Details at museumofflight.org.
We're going to have a wonderful time today in the studio. Greg Ruby and the Rhythm Runners are the group. The Rhythm Runners perform Prohibition-era jazz, a lovely group, and their music is good, too. Greg's name is probably familiar to a lot of KPLU jazz fans, and especially fans of jazz guitar. We first encountered Greg as a member of Pearl Django. He's since gone on to do a lot of other projects, including the one that he's got sitting in the room right now. Along with Greg, we've got Dennis Lichtman on clarinet from New York, Gordon Au, trumpeter from New York, Charlie Calloran, trombonist from New Orleans, Cassidy Holden, a New Orleans bassist, and from Bellingham, Julian McDonough on the drums. So I introduce you now to Greg Ruby and the Rhythm Runners. We'll be right back. Well, that was a delight. Greg Ruby and the Rhythm Runners, that is Greg's composition. It's called Scofflaw, and it's on their new release called Washington Hall Stomp. And when I introduced the band, like I said, maybe Greg's name was the only one that that folks knew. But trust me, if you're into the kind of music where jazz and Americana meet, you have heard all of these guys. They've performed with Squirrel Nut Zippers, Pokey Lafarge, Luke Winslow King, all kinds of people who are, to me, out on a cutting edge of really blending jazz and even, you know, folk. So, Greg, how did this ensemble begin?
Thank you, Nick. It's a great question. I was a few years ago. I was in New York City visiting some friends just there, kind of by happenstance, and I was told to go to a music venue to hear a Brazilian band that also played American roots music, and nothing to do with jazz at all. And I struck up a conversation with the fiddle player during the set break. And soon into our conversation, we were talking about vintage jazz music. And he said, what do you play? What instrument? I'm like, guitar. He's like, where are you from? Seattle. And at that moment, he said, by chance, are you Greg Ruby? I was given your phone number earlier today to hire you when I bring my band out to Seattle. And that person was Dennis Lickman.
And he was a fiddle player at the... Did you say he was...
He plays everything.
Wow.
He plays clarinet, fiddle, and mandolin as well.
Wow. And I want to say, you guys, the microphones are pretty freed up. So if anybody has anything to say, don't stand on propriety. Grab a microphone. We don't care if there's a little...
You can even grab it out of my hand if necessary. Quickly.
So you two got together and eventually formed the unit that you have now.
It was a series of coincidences that just sort of led each step of the way. So that tour on the West Coast, I actually wasn't able to do, but it turned out that we were both in rural Virginia around the same time that summer, and had Dennis. What was the gig you had?
It was. I had been booked to put together a band for a private event. A wonderful musician friend of mine whose family was having a family reunion and whose grandmother had passed away a year earlier, and it was kind of a memorial party in her honor, and they wanted to have a traditional jazz band because that had been a passion of hers. And she had hosted many great bands out of New Orleans over the decades at this particular house. So seeing as how I was going to be in rural Virginia and that concert was nearby and Greg was going to be there, I hired Greg, and Charlie, the trombone player, and I were both teaching at a traditional jazz camp in rural Virginia, which is why I was there. And we asked Gordon to come down from New York, and that was the five of us that became the Rhythm Runners.
Wow.
So later on, when Greg was putting together some music for a project in Seattle, he thought that the five of us would be a good fit. And that's how this band was born.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about the CD itself. You are featuring the music of the compositions of a very obscure Seattle Prohibition area composer named Franklin D. Waldron. How did that begin its genesis?
So briefly after this tour in Virginia, I came back and we had recorded a couple compositions of mine during that time. And I had set out to compose a score of Prohibition era jazz music to perform for dancers at Washington Hall in 2014. And during that time, it seemed like a very good idea to search out the earliest known Seattle composers or recordings or whatever might be from that area or era of the 1920s. And there was very, very little archive, but I was reading in the book Jackson Street After Hours by Paul DeBarros, and in it mentioned a musician named Frank D. Waldron who was a Central Area or Central District resident, and he had written a saxophone tutorial book in 1924 that he used all original compositions in. And so I thought, well, this is the book that I have to find to use. And I went through the usual searches of everywhere from, the library, the university library, rare book dealers, WorldCat. I kind of looked through all the traditional means. And I couldn't find a copy. So I called up the author and was like, Paul, do you have a copy of this book by chance? You mention it in Jackson Street. And for those of you who don't know, Jackson Street After Hours is the definitive book on the history of jazz in Seattle, reaching back to its inception through the 50s. And it's a wonderful book and a great read. It should be in every jazz enthusiast library. So he was like, well, I happen to have a photocopy of the book in my archives in the basement. And just come over and take it. And so I went over, and it was just sheets of paper that, you know, large photocopies that he had made 25 years previous when he was putting the book together. And so I took three of those songs and arranged them for the band and put together, made it part of the repertoire that we were doing at Washington Hall for the dancers. And they are wonderful compositions. And so that kind of brought in the whole Frank Waldron piece. But Frank Waldron was an obscure musician in terms of history. But during his era, you know, he was playing regularly throughout Seattle all through the 20s. And he was also a significant teacher. He was both Quincy Jones and Buddy Catlett's early music teacher. Wow. And his so as an educator and a performer and also a businessman self-publishing his book, Frank D. Waldron's Syncopated Classic.
Am I correct in remembering that Waldron never actually recorded any of this material?
Correct. Yeah, Waldron never recorded at all, as was the case for many of the musicians who stayed in Seattle. I think, from the research that I've done over the last year through a Four Culture grant, I was able to just kind of dig into the history a little bit more. And very, very little was recorded in Seattle from throughout the 20s and 30s. It wasn't until the 1940s that jazz recordings started to happen with any significant detail. So there was a whole period of time that both Waldron and, you know, other early important musicians in Seattle, such as Oscar Holden and others, didn't have the opportunity to record. Work was good enough that they didn't feel compelled to go to Chicago or Los Angeles, so they stayed in Seattle, making their own music.
So 80, 100 years goes by, you come around.
So finding a photocopy in a basement of an author.
Why don't you play us a Waldron song, introduction,
great.
Perhaps, please.
Great, we'll do that. This is one titled "Pretty Doll" from his book, A Syncopated Classic.
Thank you.
on 88.5 KPLU. You're listening to Greg Ruby and the Rhythm Runners. You guys are from all over the country, from Bellingham and Seattle to New York and New Orleans. How do you rehearse? Could this band have existed pre-internet? All right, Cassidy on bass is going to answer this one.
Well, when we're talking about the history of this music, one of the interesting things is how much cross-pollination there is in the different cities. There's always been a connection between New Orleans and New York and Seattle. And we were talking about the path of Jelly Roll Morton, mm-hmm. who's a, you know, a big influence on this stuff. And he went from New Orleans to Biloxi and then disappeared in the South for a while, ends up in Chicago. And then Greg informed me that he spent 3 or 4 months in Vancouver, where he probably hung out with Frank Waldron, and then went back to Chicago, recorded all this stuff, went on to New York and Washington.
Yeah. And he has a, in fact, Jelly Roll Morton has a song called Seattle Hunch.
Yeah, totally.
And it's rumored that he lived for a while and worked at playing piano in a house of ill repute in Ponder's Corners out by the Joint Base Lewis McChord.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, the guys went where the work was and where the music was good, you know. And but there, you know, it was you took the train. Somebody would call you up or send you a telegram or a letter, say, "Come out! I've worked for 3 months for you." And if work was scarce where you were, you know, you went out for 3 months. It's guaranteed. That's how it was in that. You'd play at a hotel for months on end. Yeah.
But in terms of this band and arrangements and things, are you guys emailing your parts to each other and that sort of thing?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And now Dennis has the microphone.
Yes, I just wanted to say that Greg does most of the work by far.
That's good for you guys.
Yeah. It's a great situation to jump into. And Greg, as I hope you picked up from my description of how the band came together earlier, he has a way of bringing people and things together. But when he digs up this music and puts it all down on paper, that's a really important start. But then once we're all actually in the room together and everybody kind of contributing ideas on the arrangements, that's mm-hmm. when it comes together. And Greg is absolutely at the forefront of all of this. But none of us really know, despite practicing all the music ahead of time from the charts that Greg emails around, none of us really know what it's all going to sound like until we're all there. Well, and putting it together.
So. I hope it's mostly a delightful surprise.
Absolutely. Without fail, yes.
In Depression era, Prohibition era, the older jazz music, I think that an aspect of it kind of got lost in the mists of history. This music is delightfully naughty, you know? I mean, just listening to the trombone growls and things like that, you know?
That's why I play this.
Charlie is a king of the grumpy old man style of trombone playing, which is prevalent in New Orleans, but sometimes hard to come by in other places.
Exactly. And the microphone is going back to Cassidy.
Yeah, well, the thing is that recording doesn't really come in until well after Prohibition. So our firsthand accounts, you can think of that as like a snapshot of a time and a place.
Right.
Our firsthand accounts of the music are kind of, you know, underrepresented.
Yeah,
so before that, the emphasis is on sheet music, and it's really hard to translate a really body sensibility with sheet music. They're trying, you know. But the fact is that music, this music specifically, is very functional. You know, in New Orleans, it's played in the sporting houses, or it's played in Seattle here in like a maritime, a Skid Row environment.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all about functionality, and maybe the body or side isn't represented as well, but it's there, I assure
well,
you.
I'm glad you guys are, you know, kind of working in that direction. I mean, if a New Orleans slow drag ain't sexy, I don't know what else it is. You know, it's great stuff. So besides the fact that it's nasty, what is it about this music that you guys love so much to, you know, to make it your the focus, I guess? They're passing the microphone around. They're thinking.
Gordon is pondering.
You want to take a shot, Gordon?
Well, you know, for me personally, you know, I came upon, I guess I would call it in a larger sense, traditional jazz or early jazz. Mm-hmm. But I heard this music first when I was very little. I have an uncle who plays in a traditional jazz band based out of Three Rivers, California. But even as a young child, apparently I was, you know, dancing around in my diapers to this kind of music, and that's because obviously it has this immediacy and this energy that is, you know, just translates more directly, it seems, than if I were to generalize some of the modern music today. I would hesitate to say the modern jazz of today, because I'm a big proponent of that as well. Mm-hmm. But yes, there's something about this music, just the sheer joy that communicates very readily.
Yeah, my earliest memory of dancing and music was Fats Waller records. My mom gave me her old Fats Waller records to play in my bedroom, and that was like most amazing stuff to jump on the bed to in the world.
Speaking of body music, there.
And it's going to Greg.
And I think it's important to mention too that a lot of the music, you know, served as dance music as well as just having a very uplifting, joyful sound. Mm-hmm. And being, you know, very serious in its precision and execution, but at the same time not taking itself too seriously. There's a very lighthearted whimsy that occurs in it that I think speaks, you know, it speaks to me, and I've always you know, either the early music of Django Reinhardt or, you know, getting pulled into this genre, and but all of it just has that sort of relentless joy. Yeah. that is part of it. Yeah.
Well, I think we've got time for one more example of relentless joy, or something, or something naughty.
This is one called "That's It" by Frank Waldron.